It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, on the one hand, we're telling everybody that they should be eating more fruits and vegetables, and they should be knowing about where those fruits and vegetables come from. We don't have to tell them that because everybody is finding their way to that idea of understanding where their fruits and vegetables come from. When it came to fresh produce, it was a pretty easy guess that it was from the Sun Belt or somebody's garden or CSA or a farmer's market. Kind of one or the other. Things were shipped in oftentimes from Florida or Texas, Arizona, and mostly California for fruits and vegetables. And then again, people make the best of all sorts of things in their own backyard or their own farmer's market. The problem with that is that the seasons. And so you can't really grow produce year-round. Well, there's been a solution that's been around for some time, and that is that you can go into greenhouses, that you can go under glass or whatever the material is, or in hoops in some cases, but it's not quite clicked. Well, there's a company, there's a farming group that is making that happen, and he's somebody who is on the program here at the Ag Tech Conference, and I want to welcome Neil Parikh. Neil, I'm glad you could take a few minutes to be with us on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you, Roger. Nice to meet you.
So, Neil, why don't you explain what you're doing? What is the farm producing?
Absolutely. So Bright Farms is a New York City-based company. We are creating the nation's first brand for local produce. We are a vertically integrated company that builds, owns, and operates hydroponic greenhouses throughout the Midwest and East Coast and partners with supermarkets in those markets to deliver fresh, great-tasting local produce. We have started with leafy greens and tomatoes as our first products in perishable produce that we're going to be growing.
So how far away would you be from the stores where you have your farming operations, again, in a greenhouse operation, how far away would you be from the stores that you're supplying?
So our entire business model is to decentralize agriculture, specifically the growing of perishable produce. That means bringing hyper-local produce to our customers. So when we locate a farm in a Chicago or a DC metropolitan area, all of the stores and all the consumers will be about 100 to 200 miles away from each farm.
So it's pretty close at hand. And then deciding what you're growing, you said you're focusing on leafy greens and tomatoes at first. As you grow, are you going to be getting into other vegetables? Is it mostly vegetables, more vegetables than fruit?
Absolutely. We are focused on perishable produce, and we're focused on ones that could grow indoors and that have very fast grow cycles, so we could deliver year-round commercial scale volumes to our customers. Fruit is difficult. You know, they have if it's tree fruit, it grows over years, and it grows well outdoors. Indoor crops like leafy greens or tomatoes work very well for our business model. You'll see us eventually expanding to other crops like cucumbers, peppers, and even berries as well.
So do the supermarkets, do they come out and visit the farm and see, you know, what your farming operation is? Because I can relate to them going out to farms that are the old-fashioned kind of farms that and walking around and looking and seeing the production practices. But do you get visitors from the retailers?
Absolutely. Yeah. We 4 years ago, before we had a farm built, it was very difficult to kind of show that we were tangible, that we could actually grow what we said we would grow. At this point, when we have three farms in operation in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Illinois, it's much easier, and we have a lot of retailers coming and a lot of interest. Supermarket retailers really want to source more of their produce from greenhouse producers like ourselves, both because of food safety reasons and because they just can't meet customer demand for locally grown produce year-round in those markets. Supermarkets do visit farms and greenhouses all the time. I think what they're struck with us by is that we're bringing state-of-the-art technology to bear. We're not asking them to pay any of the costs of a greenhouse. All we're asking them to do is to partner with us to purchase what we're producing. And they like the idea of that, and it resonates with what they need to give to their customers.
Now, it would seem that having these smaller scale farms that you could possibly adjust and do different varieties, that you might, rather than a commodity, this is what we get on the most trucks to head across the country, that perhaps in regions of the country you might be able to select certain varieties. Is that right?
No, it's an excellent point, Roger, and you're absolutely right. You know, so right now we're growing baby spinach, baby arugula, baby kale, but we're oftentimes growing slightly different varietals of those crops than what consumers are seeing. So it's a more tender kale. It's a different striation of arugula. Different texture, different shape. And in tomatoes, we're growing snack tomatoes that aren't just the typical red. You'll get some striped tomatoes, you'll get some other colors eventually. It's absolutely, we're at that nascent period of doing that. But right now the industry has selected for seeds and varieties of crops that travel well, that travel long distances from California, from Canada, from Mexico, from the areas of production. We could absolutely change that by growing crops that are more tender, more fresh, more flavorful, because we don't have to worry about transporting them large distances.
Now, will you be giving exclusivity on any of these varieties to certain supermarkets? So you're working in some region in Pittsburgh, for example, and say, okay, you get to be the ones that have this particular kind of tomato or lettuce.
Yes, we haven't started that thus far. We give exclusivity to our customers right now for all the products we grow. So, for example, in Virginia, we're only growing for Giant Foods, which is part of Ahold Delhaize. That's our customer there. But eventually, we may partner with other supermarkets in the metro area, but say to Giant, this particular variety of snack tomatoes is yours alone. And that's something that they're very attracted by.
Now, are your products organic?
They're not organic currently. Organic certification is something that's very difficult to do for hydroponic growers, and it has to do, without getting into the nuances, the type of fertilizer mix that you use that's liquefied if it could be organic certified. There is a movement by field-grown producers to not allow hydroponic growers to be certified organic. It's something that we're communicating with in the industry, we and other hydroponic growers, because we feel like if we can meet the certification standards of the industry, customers deserve the option of purchasing organic crops indoor. So it's something that is a process that we'll be that we'll be working on over the next year to 2 years.
We've actually had a podcast on that, and I know more part of the issue is that many of the people that established the organic standards made it a point of saying that part of what they're doing is trying to improve the earth and trying to rebuild soils, and that was part of their kind of beyond just not using pesticides and synthetic fertilizers. You really can't claim a connection with the earth with this kind of production system, I would guess. You're using a substrate type of product. You're not really using earth to produce the produce.
Well, so the way we think about it is that we're still bringing agriculture back to those communities that oftentimes didn't have, in areas of central Illinois or the part of Virginia that we're in, where agriculture has fled and has either gone into big crops but is not any longer in perishable produce. We're bringing that back, so we have a connection to the community. And the other part of organic that resonates with consumers is that, is this product good for your family, for your children? Absolutely, we could claim that. In fact, we think that if you think about organic as a proxy for stewardship of the earth, in a broader sense than just, reclaiming soil and replenishing soil conditions, we use 95% less water, less land, less fuel. We're as sustainable, if not more so, than our field-grown competitors. And so we believe that getting organic certification will be another signal to the consumers that what we're producing is sustainable for the earth and is healthy for their children to eat. We're not using any pesticides. We don't use any GMO crops. We think that in some ways it's even healthier and more sustainable than organic.
So what have you learned either from your own research or the research of your customers of what customers think when they understand that it's coming from a greenhouse close at hand versus being shipped long distances?
Yeah, we actually find that's not problematic for consumers. They understand that their tomatoes have been grown in hothouses or greenhouses in Canada or Mexico for decades. For leafy greens, it's a little bit more unusual, but what they care about is not whether it's grown indoor or outdoor, in soil or not in soil. What they care about is how far away it is grown, which is a proxy for how fresh it is and how flavorful it is. And then also whether it's making an impact in their local communities. In our stores, the signage includes, you know, signage that says Bright Farms is grown 13 miles away from this store. We put the names and faces of our farmers that are growing the produce in the stores as part of our signage as well. That connection is really important and resonates with consumers quite clearly, impactfully. That is the kind of message we're delivering. You know, we don't hide the fact that we're growing indoors, but we find that that's not actually that compelling. What's more compelling is this connection to the community, that they're creating jobs, that they know where their food is coming from.
The one thing I can't quite picture is when you look at the local sales in some of the stores, they'll put a huge poster up and say it's not only local, but they'll show some farmer and you know, outstanding in his field. And they say, here's our farm. So that's part of their merchandising approach. And it's true, everybody seems to integrate a certain amount of local farming, even though the bulk of it is still coming in from out, you know, other areas. It would seem to me it's a little different for you to try to project a personality, or whether you need to project a personality. You've got these other attributes you're talking about, but how do you talk about who we are as the producers and suppliers? Do you try to put a face on your company yet?
Absolutely. We do demos that includes the farming, you know, the farmers and the workers at our facilities, our farms. We all go out as a team to all of the stores as often as we can. We do put a face to the name, and that's really important for a small, nascent company. We don't have the brand awareness of an Earthbound or a Taylor Farms, so it's really important for people to know and trust us. Trust and credibility is obviously a key issue across segments of food. It's not just in produce, and it's very meaningful. So we do as much as we can, and you'll see that a little bit with other merchandising of local. We feel like that's marketing more than it's really true, because, you know, 3/4 of the year, that farmer is not the one growing. It's actually someone in Chile, or it's someone in Mexico. It's someone pretty far away growing your crop. Whereas for us, year round, it's the exact same people that are coming to those stores all the time.
Well, that is really, really fascinating. Now, let's just talk quickly about the future. I would imagine it's minuscule as far as looking at the total markets currently in the United States. But what do you project? How much do you have a feeling for as an industry? I wouldn't put you on the spot, just a projection for your individual company, because there'll be some competitors, no doubt. Mm-hmm. What's a realistic expectation that the industry growth would be over the next 4 or 5 years?
We think there's incredible potential for growth in the industry. If you think about leafy greens, you think about some of the constraints that field-grown producers here in Salinas are facing with water shortages, even though the drought is temporarily over. I think long-term, no one believes that, you know, water won't continue to be a problem. It will long-term. Land and labor issues as well. We know, I think, that the forces are kind of the writings on the wall that an industry is going to have to move away outside of Salinas in Yuma. We think that it's going to move to indoor cultivation. So, you know, it's hard to give a percentage, but I think it's going to be very meaningful and incredible growth from where it is today, where it's, you know, less than 1% of that growth is coming from, or that cultivation is coming from indoor producers.
Well, one more sustainability question I have, and that is, from a water standpoint, you're in areas that are getting maybe 45 inches of rain a year, and so they've got water to access, so that's one you solve, but you still have energy. And so when you have a house made out of glass in some place that the temperature gets down to zero, that's going to take a lot of energy to keep it warm. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so absolutely we use natural gas and we use electricity, and when we can, using renewable energy to power our greenhouses to heat and cool them throughout the year. Our energy costs are actually not our largest cost line item, though, in operating costs. It's still labor. So we very much are similar to other farmers here in Salinas, where we still try to, you know, do the best we can with labor. We pay a living wage. We give healthcare benefits from day one. We feel like we're treating our workers well. In terms of utility consumption, it's something that's manageable, and it is on a per square foot basis higher than a Salinas farmer. What you have to understand, though, is that we greatly reduced, almost down to zero, the fuel costs and the energy costs beyond just the farm. And when you really look at it, it can't just be on a farm basis. It's got to be the entire life cycle of that leafy green, going from the farm, from seed all the way to the customer in the supermarket. And we almost entirely eliminate all of that transportation shipping fuel costs because we're distributing, you know, tens of miles away instead of thousands of miles away. So that is part of the energy calculus as well.
Well, you bridged nicely into the other sustainability question, and that is that I started asking you about energy, which you touched on, but you went on and volunteered onto the labor side and living wages, because we see a lot from consumers, too, that want to better understand not only the production practices, but the fact that the people that there's food justice that we speak of.
Absolutely.
And that you're incorporating in that. And apparently, just like you're in a glass house, able to be very transparent. I mean, in the whole nature of your kind of system, you're transparent because everybody can see in. But it sounds like transparency is a foundational issue for you.
Absolutely. I mean, we do a lot with the communities to help them understand the impact that we could have, the positive impact we could have in the community. Almost all of our workers for every farm are hired within a 25-mile area. They are, you know, they're skilled, they're trained in the skills that we need them to grow our products. Like I said, we pay a living wage, we pay healthcare benefits, we treat our workers very well, and we're very proud of that. We also partner with nonprofits to donate part of our crop every year. We focus on food deserts in every metropolitan area that we're in to make sure that, you know, our produce isn't just going to, you know, a certain segment of the demographic population for a city area. We partner with worker programs to bring ex-prisoners back into the workforce as well. We do a number of things that we feel are central to our ethos, to the DNA of our company. Transparency is part of that, but it's the other facet of sustainability, really kind of the social justice aspect of it.
Well, it's really interesting. And since we're talking about transparency, let me just wrap up then by saying to be even more transparent, learning about where this technology is, where we are with this, but where we are with your company and your journey, where do people look to find more information?
Brightfarms.com is probably the best place to our website, and we have a Twitter account and Facebook account as well, as every company today has to. We have a lot of social media, so I would encourage everybody to check us out on the internet and through our social media channels.
Well, we have listeners for Farm to Table Talk all over the country, so coming possibly to a neighborhood of their own, they may see some of more product that it's grown in greenhouses. Neil Parikh with Bright Farms, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.